Okay, so this is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are broadcasting live from the 12th floor of the State Capitol from the Public Service Commission hearing room. The topic of the discussion is a work session on the public input process, and we did notice three existing cases, not because we intend to talk about those cases, but they may come up and as a conversation unfolds about public input, because there have been various different issues that have come up regarding public input in each of these cases. So it's the Sakakawea Pipeline, PU 15-114, Dakota Access, PU-14-842, and MDU rate, gas rate increase request, PU-15-90. Excuse me? And Bridger?
Bridger was supposed to be added, but I don't have the case number.
Bridger Pipeline.
Okay. If it wasn't added, it wasn't added. But
okay.
Later.
Okay, so the goal here is to help us, well, is to discuss our existing policy for how we distinguish between public input and public record, or the record, and how we communicate that with the public so they understand the distinction. And then I think also on the table is whether we want to continue having a distinction, if there's any way to avoid this in the future. One of the issues that it became somewhat confusing at the first Dakota Access hearing, because people came to the hearing and testified, and then some people came to the hearing and read testimony from other people who were not there. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Zach, we included that in the public record.
We did. We did.
And
I think, Commissioner, some of that was a bit confusing as to specifically what was being read. Was it read on behalf, or did the person who was reading it also have some interest as well?
Mm-hmm.
So there may be one or two, to my memory, of someone along those lines.
Well, Stacy, what are you hearing from the public on this issue?
You want the
Well, do you guys right? want? Yes. Jump in. Sorry.
I'll let Randy go first. Make sure we're tracking
well,
here.
I want to emphasize, and you kind of alluded to it, but emphasize this isn't just about getting it straight for us. It's about getting it straight for citizens out there, because they might think they have accomplished a certain goal by providing us information, and we don't use it as they intended because they didn't do something a certain way. And I thought of this yesterday in a licensing discussion, actually, and it got down to how we're keeping track of complaints. And well, you know, there was one answer, and then somehow or another we stumbled on the fact that one of us was talking about informal complaints and the other was talking about formal complaints. And, you know, so people can't know that distinction. And then as it went further, it turned out that there's another classification. If someone just calls in and complains, that's not necessarily either one. And so, you know, there's no way that the public can keep track of all this stuff necessarily, so I do think it's important to talk about it, and mm-hmm. so that when someone does just call in or stop us on the street or send an email or something like that, we can try and gauge what it is they're trying to get across. If it's just telling us to vote a certain way on a certain issue, then that's just the end of it. But if they're trying to accomplish something more, get something on the record a certain way, we need to all be able to give them the right guidance of mm-hmm. what they need to do to accomplish their goal.
Good point. Brian.
Madam Chair, I agree with the road you were headed down, but I do want to just throw in a couple thoughts. As I think that the goal I'd hope to get out of this meeting is, well, you hit on it already that we got these cases, but how to deal with the information flow. Because I think in my mind I've got a good picture of how we should be doing it and how we are doing it to a point. It's some of these gray areas about where we, the three of us, find ourselves intermixing terms. To me, there's public input, which is anything received outside of the hearing, and then there's the official record, which oftentimes we'll say public input, and we'll throw the terminology around, which causes a lot of problems for others, because they mean there's public input, and there's the record. So some of that, but I think maybe that a way to walk through it would be, there's a lot of different ways to do it. I think I understand how it all is supposed to work. It's just how that I think, speaking for myself, we're always so, you don't want to cut people off on their input. But I think that's one of the decision points today, is to get back to what is it we should respond to them so they really know what it is they've done. Mm-hmm. So, but I think you were headed down the right road, but that was my thoughts, I guess.
So would it be helpful for Alana to just outline the way it's supposed to be done and the distinction as a starting point for the discussion? Or as the next step in the discussion?
Well, that's because I think the procedures that our general counsel has that understands are very good, and I think that the turnover of personnel, commissioners, myself included, some of that we, the commissioners, maybe have inadvertently maybe intermixed terms which have then confused some of the newer staff. I think our procedures are pretty good. It's just if we're following them.
Yeah, I think they're probably pretty good, too, from what I understand. This is Alana. I think a couple basic points that everyone has to keep in mind, and that is an education challenge with the public. The first one being record evidence. That's the only thing you can use to make a decision. And Julie Prescott and Jack and I were looking at 2832 yesterday again, and Chapter 2832 is the state law on the procedure. It's based in the Constitution, the procedure you use for administrative proceedings. And there's some pretty strict language that you can only make a decision on the record evidence. And so, yes, public input can be record evidence, or maybe it isn't record evidence. And so that's one of the areas, the gray areas I think you want to get to. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think before that, the record evidence applies to before the hearing or during the hearing, if something is said on the record or not, subject to cross-examination, protected by all the constitutional provisions. That's how it gets to be record evidence, when it's subject to cross-examination, when it's sworn. That's what makes it qualify as record evidence. But even after the hearing, something can be made record evidence by following certain procedures. I just came across yesterday or maybe the day before, but I just came across a memo from Al Wall that we had actually requested in the Keystone case, where he talked about making things you learned later part of the record that you could use to decide. I sent it. I've got it copied there again. You can read it when you have time. So you keep that distinction between record and non-record in mind, and we do make every effort to tell the public the difference. We've got the brochure. I think Stacy's probably explaining that. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but when I talk to her on the phone to people when they call in, and I don't know how to make that perfect, that information. Then, regardless of record or non-record, you have the situation of an ex parte communications. It's a different issue. It's someone talking to you about something you have to decide when they have an interest in that issue, and not the other parties not having the benefit of that information. That's not supposed to result in record evidence. That's a violation. It's an ethical violation and a legal violation. And there are ways to fix it, but that's sort of a different track of situation that we all staff and commissioners need to be aware of, so that we can fix it if necessary. Mm-hmm. And the general public probably would struggle with understanding the difference. There are plenty of attorneys and people in that category of parties or could be a party who bend the rules on that also. And we try to, we've been in situations where we've sent that information back, say to a city attorney, and said, this is an ex parte communication. You need to follow these rules if you want to get it in. So that's another issue, I think, that you want to address, how you're going to handle it. And that issue, you have to disclose legally. You have to tell people it happened. But then you also probably have to make a decision of whether you want it to be considered record evidence or not. So those are like the two, those are the two main, as I see, the two main areas. I mean, open records is a third one, but I think we all know that pretty well. Everything's open, whether it's evidence or not.
And then it seems like we sort of do a case-by-case basis in each hearing on whether we accept letters from people who are not there but want to have their letter included in the record, read by others. I mean, that they're not subject to cross-examination then.
Right.
Is that up to the hearing judge to determine on a case-by-case basis? We don't have to do that the same every single time?
If it's happening at the hearing, it's up to the hearing judge. And the beauty of it happening at a hearing is that the other side, whoever it is, whether it's the applicant or all the interveners or whoever, or Jack, the other side is hearing that that's happening and can object. And then you'll address that. It's when it happens after or before that it's a little.
That's one of the friction points I think that the three of us have to work through, because the way I view it is the other attorney, whoever that might be, has to object to somebody saying something. And then the judge has to make a decision. But then the three of us, speaking for myself, I may want that person to do it even if the judge overrules the objection. That's one of those really gray areas where we find ourselves that I think that last hearing in particular, we might have wanted to hear that individual's input no matter what the judge said. We have some authority there, too.
I think you do. I think you can tee that up. I mean, a person, I know that there's other considerations to whether you would do that at a hearing, like start a little bit of a difference of opinion argument going on.
Amongst commissioners, that's no place to have it.
Exactly. But you can find a way, whether it's coming back here and talking it over and then writing a letter and asking or whatever, to bring that information in. A party can ask you to decide over the hearing officer, and you can decide on your own volition to overrule or make a different decision than the hearing officer has made.
Although no citizen is going to be sitting there and get told by a hearing officer that they can't do a certain, present a certain thing, and think of it that they can ask us to overrule that office.
I understand that. But there are other people in the room that might be thinking of it, like your commission counsel. You might just ask to go off the record and have a you have to disclose that you're meeting to discuss it, but you could discuss it amongst yourselves with your counsel. So I think part of this, I think, is we don't stop and think slowly at those moments so that we can find a way to accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Is it our role to provide some guidance to the ALJ office of what it is we expect, or are there rules of evidence that decide these things? We shouldn't be going out, I don't think, and having one hearing where the judge says, you just read whatever it is that you say that somebody wrote and put their name on it, and the next one they absolutely don't allow that kind of thing. Seems like we should have some consistency in our hearings.
Yes, and maybe that's a discussion to have as a commission. You should provide guidance to the ALJ, and we have had that in the past. And you should be consistent. So that's one of the reasons why agencies waive the rules of evidence, so that everything can come in, and then you can sift through it, and you can give it as the weight you think you need to give it when you're making the decision, but it's all on the record. And you can give all that kind of guidance to your ALJ. I'm just sure in the middle of the hearing it's a little awkward, but ahead of time.
Kind of the road we were on years ago, always the past, right? But we were always on. We kind of knew they would waive everything, and judges would let anybody say whatever they wanted to. We would give it the appropriate weight. But somewhere in the last while, we found where attorneys are objecting and then judges are sustaining it, and then we're cutting people off. That, I think, is what has changed. Where
the attorney's objecting, that's the biggest.
Well, the attorney's objected before, too.
That's their job.
But Judge Wall would say, noted, we waive the rules of evidence, go ahead.
Right.
And he would make a comment and say, the commissioners are smart people, they'll give it whatever weight appropriate. Where now we're actually, some of the judges have cut people off, which I think is, for me, I don't like that. I like them to let them say their piece, and then I'll give it the appropriate weight.
Mm-hmm. And I think Alana's right. It does go to having a conversation, I think, with OAH on that issue, because your rules do allow specifically 6902.0501. The commission or the hearing officer, however, may waive the rules of evidence where such waiver is necessary to ascertain the substantial rights of a party, and it continues on. So you have that ability to waive the rules of evidence.
Well, I agree that we should be consistent, and I'm comfortable with waiving the rules of evidence. If I understand that that then means that people can get up and say what they want, and if the members of the public or really anybody who steps up there during the hearing can say what they want, and the judge is going to let them and will give it the weight.
There was constraints, though, Madam Chair, before where – I go back to Judge Wall because he ran a pretty good ship where – We would waive the rules of evidence. People would talk, but then there was times I can think of the Cooperstown wind farm. He'd say, "Okay, this is you've gone too far. Mm-hmm. You're not talking about cows getting hit by lightning and Hoople. It has nothing to do with this hearing." And so that the judge was the constraint on that. Mm-hmm. He would allow it to a point where he just thought it became out of the limits, and he would shut them down. And I always thought the beauty of that was it's not me as a commissioner doing it. It's not one of the other attorneys, which creates an adversarial potential situation. It was a judge saying, "I'm letting you speak, but you've gone outside the realm of what is really."
No. And what's their boundaries? I mean, what do they? What's the judge to use as
their experience?
Well, yes, but the main one is relevance, and that's what you're kind of saying. If it's crossed over into not relevant,
yeah.
And he would let a lot in there, but yeah. There was a point where you could. He would just stop them,
mm-hmm. Or if it was repetitive, you know, and you want to keep that in control too. Now we've had experiences where it was just taking too long, and mm-hmm. ALJs have cut it off, and that I tend to think probably should not happen. It takes as long as it takes for people to be heard, but
right.
But we can meet with, and I think it might be good if several of us met with OAH and just had that. Kind of a conversation about what we're seeing in the hearings, and Zach, you and Mitch, if you'd like to come to talk about how to run those hearings.
In that light, I think Stacy and I are resisting asking how the cows turned out. you know, when it comes to these hearings, I think what I'm hearing is a favorability toward wanting to hear all these people out. I think, lean though toward people getting up and saying their piece, but not standing up there or sitting there and reading everybody else's letters. If they brought in a letter from a third party that we can't ask a question, I'm almost thinking that should just be submitted as a piece of evidence. But I don't, you know, to stand up there and spend hours reading other people's letters, I don't get that much out of it usually. And we can't ask a question.
Right. Well, that kind of brings me to the other methodology for getting information into the record that we saw in Dakota Access, and that was an affidavit, right? Mm-hmm. And a letter submitted. One of the interveners provided testimony that way.
Right. And that was that's a little bit different, Commissioner, because the parties stipulated to that affidavit.
Yep.
So it was by agreement. Had one of the parties objected to that, then the ALJ would have had to issue a ruling on that. But as I recall, the circumstances were such that the person who had intervened was unavailable for medical reasons or something like that. So it was a special exception, I suppose, and the parties did not object to the filing of an affidavit allowing the person to submit that. So Dakota Access certainly could have objected, or Enbridge certainly could have objected, but it was by stipulation.
So would that be a tool that's available to a person who calls in and says, "I cannot make it to that hearing, but I want my information considered in the record"?
I think, yes. In theory, absolutely. You know, it would require someone to have the forethought and knowledge of that possibility, and then at the same time,
Stacy
it
could be the one providing.
Stacy could.
That is the biggest frustration that I get from callers and writers beforehand, because I give them the language about the difference between being on the record at the hearing, and I do hear that a lot. but I can't be at the hearing, and it's only that day. Are you telling me that no matter what I do, I can't get on the official record? So I guess that was one of my questions, is there a process
but then
for them to do that?
There is, but it's also, you know, the company could object to that because mm-hmm. it would not have the right to cross-examine that person. In this case, with Mr. Bopp, who intervened, it was stipulated to, he was represented. I don't know how, you know, another situation would mm-hmm. Turn out. Someone could object to it and would, you know, quite frankly, might be a valid objection.
Sure.
As to,
yeah, it depends.
It's a slippery slope. It's,
yeah. Yeah, I will,
we are still
yeah.
a judicial body. Could you imagine somebody telling Judge Vandewall, I can't make it that day?
Well, I'll just say, too, that if I would start offering that up, that information yeah. up to people, we would get a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Just
yeah.
to
most
let you know. Because,
would do it
yeah.
way, then.
Yeah.
And
so I don't
know
who wants to sit there for 10 hours. And
I certainly am completely speculating as to what the response would be, but I think at some point, you know, companies would be resistant to stipulating to admission of some of these affidavits because they're not able to cross-examine, they're not able to ask these folks questions.
There must be a process where they could if they really needed to, right?
Well, here's how I see it playing out. And I wanted to point out, though, in Dakota Access, the good thing about that was that the whole discussion was worked out at a pre-hearing conference.
Right.
So everybody knew even before you knew that there was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
The parties knew that somebody had asked for this and had some time to think about it and, it, you know, make up their mind about whether there was a problem or not. And that really worked well. But you can tell someone, I always advise people, you don't say you can't send this in or whatever. They send it in, commission's going to make a decision what to do with it. When it comes in and it goes to that other party, if you tell the person that party objects, it's possible that it will be rejected unless you are available for a hearing. And that would mean another day, another, you know, you would be sitting at another hearing. Those are all possibilities, but it could be rejected if that didn't happen.
And I never tell a person not to send it in, but
right.
I do inform them that this is going to go in the public input file and that it's different than the official record and that if you want to be on the official record, you should come to the
yeah.
hearing. And then that's when I get into the, well, I can't come to the hearing.
Yeah. And then
it's only that day and I can't come that day. And then they do get angry because they're like, so you're telling me that no matter what I do, I can't get on the official record unless I come to the hearing. And
mm-hmm. then that's so, where I think that it's a decision of the three of us to get to is how strong we hold the ground. We draw the parallel to this is a court. They're, I mean, mm-hmm. think of going to them as going to see a judge. And that's what's hard, I think, is to draw that line sometimes.
Yeah, and where do you draw the line at why they can't make it? Some you know,
right.
And I don't know if I – sometimes they'll tell me, sometimes they won't, but is it a they just don't want to take the time or they have a really serious reason that they can't be there, whether it's medical or
– In the
– don't always know, but
the way I remember the Keystone line, and I was not part of the commission then, but I was following it very closely, was after the hearings were closed, there was just an onslaught of public input that came in.
Mm-hmm.
And the commissioners reviewed the public input, and one of them, I don't know which one, brought the motion forward and said, you know, there's so much public input that I'd like to consider. I want to open the record up again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a tool that we have that we've not used.
And I think
how
it
did
happened
that work?
More than once in case.
I move we open up the official record.
I know, but then what happened?
Well, okay. And that process is in Chapter 2832 also. It's any evidence you get afterwards, even if it's from your staff that you want to consider, you notify the parties. You make the motion that says, I want to consider it. You don't say, I'm believing it. You say, I want to consider it. And then that prompts a notice to the parties, and then they have an opportunity to either submit rebuttal and or cross-examine that person. So they could have asked for a hearing to bring in landowner XYZ to cross-examine if they chose to. It happened more than once, I think, in Keystone.
And you did it, and that just, the way it played out in that case is you opened it, nobody wanted to cross-examine, or...
If I'm not mistaken, we probably got some responses. I'd have to go back and look, but
okay, so
like
the company
rebuttal
could respond
or something.
In writing,
but
yeah,
I don't think we had, I don't think we had more hearings, but we did have more evidence made part of the record. And a lot of that was moving the line and stuff after because of issues that weren't fleshed out sufficiently at the hearing because these people didn't come.
Right.
So it was impacting, you know, changes in location, impacting what was applied for factually, which I think might be happening a little bit in some of the current cases. Like some people with factual information after the hearing that are going to affect where the line goes. That's what I've heard the rumor around the hall. So.
But it does seem like, just even in my short time here, that the amount of information that's coming in electronically via email or letters is really, really ramped up. I mean, this case that's in front of us, the MDU rate case, I mean, we've all had our inboxes just inundated with emails. And so what is the expectation? I mean, that's, do we respond back to each one of those? What? How are we supposed to deal with that kind of stuff?
Well, in MDU, it might be a simple solution only because I think a lot of those were from a party. Sure. And so they were wrongly submitted. I mean, the party has even higher level of obligation.
And how do, like, we as a commissioner, I get 78 emails from, it's the same form email, different names, but it's from the same body. What do I do with that? It's I have to be careful it's ex parte if I don't do something with it. But I know all three of us get it.
Yes.
So do I, what do I do?
Well, come and knock on one of our doors right away. But in this case, you print those or you have John print them all or Steve so that I can compare them to what the party has filed and make sure they're all served on MDU and the other parties.
What if it was individual citizens that weren't part of AARP? They send me something.
Shoot them to public input.
But, okay, so here's another issue on public input. the public input file that we have is not available for the public or parties to view.
I know.
Unless they request it.
Where's Steve? Steve and I have been asking to docket that for ages. But, yes, it's not. It's open record if you know enough to ask for it.
Why don't we make that stuff open?
I don't know. I was hoping he would be here and have
his... I have seen other commissions do it that way.
Yeah.
We just have to redact off of the personal...
Yeah.
Information, but I have seen other
There's been some reason, and I never remember what it is, but I've always wondered.
Well, do you guys agree that that stuff should be docketed and available for any party to see when we've been... I mean, that came up in one of the recent hearings where we had gotten a letter from a party that then came and testified, and the company had seen it because it's public input.
Yeah. In Keystone, we had the company asking about every other day for... the batch of public input so that they could determine if they thought it was, you know, anything they wanted to complain about. It does say in the statute in 2832.37, the last section, it says, this is the exception for public input, it says nothing in this section, and that's the ex parte section, prohibits a member of the general public not acting on behalf or at the request of any party from communicating with an agency in cases of general interest. However, the next line, and this is the line we're talking about, says, the agency shall disclose such written communications in adjudicative proceedings. And these are all adjudicative.
Not only, we should be putting
we
it.
We should be putting
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so we have to, I mean, do you guys disagree? I think we need to make that change.
It would make it easier when I get, I've only gotten media requests for them, for the Dakota Access, and I have to print them off and scan them and put them into a file. And if they were just right there where I could shoot a link. Technically, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, even for that, I thought it seemed awkward that we had to go through all those steps.
I had to go through and redact phone numbers and stuff, too, from that database because it's not set up for public.
Why is that you have to redact it?
Under open records laws, personal phone numbers.
They sent it to us. They're putting it out there for
no,
there's certain exceptions.
It's still protected.
There's certain exceptions. It's not everything.
It's just like your home phone numbers, your home email addresses.
Home email, yeah.
Are protected under state law.
But honestly, I thought it was available for everybody, so I agree with you.
And maybe the system, maybe it could be redacted on the front end.
It could do it automatically, I would think.
Somehow. Yeah.
But so how do we take the next step to make this happen? What needs to happen here to turn, and who wants to lead this process, turning the public input files into docketed files?
I don't want to lead it. I'm not sure what has to happen.
I want to get back to the base before we completely leave this, but you can go ahead and finish with the tech stuff.
You mean whether we should do it or not?
Yeah. I have a question on an exception, and that is this.
Okay.
So someone, I don't know, I can't imagine the circumstance, but I'm just trying to think of if we're going too far. Maybe it's a company employee that knows one of us and contacts and says, you know, this can't get out there, but I do have some concerns on a certain case.
Ex parte.
Can I talk to you about this?
Yeah, and the answer is ex parte. That's not general public on general interest. That flips into about an issue, direct or indirect.
But
impacted.
Are we able to say, no, you can't talk to us about it?
That's what you have to say, yeah.
Or if they do talk.
By then, have they already? Because they've told us they have a concern and they want
well,
to.
Well, they have. They have, and if you were very strict about it, you'd be doing a summary that you'd docket that said, I had five of these phone calls that I told people I can't talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you put on the record to cure ex parte, you put on the record the summary of the content. And so the summary is they called and wanted to talk to me, but I told them I couldn't.
In the meantime, you've told the company that their employee was going to
say. Yes. Yes.
That doesn't seem right.
Well, I think our role is probably not the avenue for the company, disgruntled company employee. Our role is something else, your role, the commission's role is something else.
Well, couldn't, what I would do in a case like that is I'd have them either call the staff or advocacy staff or our attorney.
The other day when a guy came in and started trying to show me maps, and I said, whoa, stop. Mm-hmm. I brought him down the hall to Julie Prescott.
Mm-hmm. But when you say to call, you still have the same extent of an ex parte as he was just saying.
I mean, right, I'm just saying, but yeah, I get that. But
yeah,
that's easy to fix. I'm more concerned about where do we send them.
All right, and that's fine.
Other than just, so I always send them to staff. If I feel like it's ex parte to me, I say, talk to our staff and.
And we'll tell them that they have to come and testify on the record. I mean, seriously, because we can't do anything more than you can do. We just have a little more opportunity to explain.
Well, you can listen to their concerns if you, and then potentially change your questions or tweak things.
Yes.
You can do lots of
do
things
other research.
Staff
yes.
that I shouldn't be doing.
Right.
And on a rate.
Once the hearing is done, it's too late to tweak questions.
No,
right.
Because
we can bring to their attention that there is this issue.
But if say, after the hearing is closed, staff gets inundated with a line of questions, and in Julie's research, Julie Prescott, she says, God, there might be something to this. She could then bring it up to whoever holds that portfolio and say, I think you should consider opening up the record because there's things now that, as a staff person, I'm seeing some trends here that there might be some warrant to it. That's kind of where I think where we've got to really rely on the staff that if they see something, they a trend after the hearing, we can open it up again.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Steve.
Steve, we were just talking about... welcome. We were just talking about the public input file that exists that is not docketed and isn't available for actually anybody outside to see, and the need to get that stuff onto the docketed so that parties and the public and the media, whoever is interested in this information that's coming into us, can view that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some reason why you haven't wanted to do that in the past?
It may have been a previous commission decision for you to do that, is what I'm thinking, but I was not part of that commission, but I remember having
Correct.
This discussion early.
Correct. And I think the logic behind it, if my memory serves me, was that there was, in a lot of that, personal information, names, addresses, telephone numbers.
Yeah, that needs to not show up.
Yep. So we'd have to go through and redact that.
But we'd still want it in the database for our purposes.
Correct.
So.
Now, I don't see a reason why, unless that is mixed in with the text of the...
No, it's separate field boxes.
Yeah, as long as it's separate fields, I don't see an issue with redacting that stuff.
You'd still have to have the name.
Yeah.
But
yep.
The name and the text.
Yep. I don't think that would be a terribly difficult thing to do. I'd have to look and see, but I don't think so, and then push it out as a PDF to the website.
To the docket.
Oh, to the docket, yeah. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, that would go to the website as well.
Yeah, it changes, like, almost daily sometimes, though. So how would that work? Because it would have to be
I might be able to handle that.
Would each one be a different docket file? I mean, it'd be nice if there was one file that you could click that lists all, yeah, that keeps.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was thinking, is set up a report that would automatically run at end of day, create a PDF, put it out onto the server, which would automatically update the web page. So for each.
Well, we don't need to know how it's going to happen, but just that it can happen and that we can do this.
We'll continue to get more and more emails. Eventually people will have all their cell phones, and then we'll get texts.
Yeah. It's a whole other kettle of fish.
It almost seems like, let's use the emails. Do we, on certain things, I get emails on MDU's rate case. Do those go to Stacy? Do they go to whoever's handling that case in PUD or who? Or should we just even have one specific email address created in the agency that everybody who does this, all the staff people who work on this stuff, we can just always forward it to that email address, and they know to go check that sometimes. And
well, and we do have one called NDPSC that is checked regularly.
People send to that one a lot in public comments.
Yep.
And then they get forwarded to both me and the.
Because I need clarity. I've not done a good job of
analysts. We share the burden usually.
These emails on various cases always to anybody. I just thought, well, I just saying how they think I should vote. You know, yeah. That kind of.
Well,
that's a whole other question that I don't know. Do we? What are you obliged to do? If I get a complaint about something that's not a case, I don't have any obligation to do anything with it, I don't think. But I may still forward it. But if it's a pending case, I probably have an obligation to do something with it, or not.
Because you have an obligation either ex parte or under this.
Right.
Well, that begs the question as to whether or not the commissioners should have emails themselves.
I mean, absolutely.
The Attorney General does not have his own email.
I've thought of that over the years, too.
You know, it's a public, it's just a general ndag.com or that's whatever the end is. And I don't think the governor, well, I could be wrong on that, but I know the Attorney General does not have his own email, which would probably limit your ability to function in some respects, too. But it would take care of this situation.
Well, they have internal email, though.
There must be some kind of internal, how does staff sense
I don't know. I'm not.
The ones I've worked with have always had internal emails. But
as long as
it's
not available to the public,
right.
it would limit the amount of emails on input that you're getting, and it would rather direct it to a general email account where perhaps Stacy or other staff members can look at that and then docket it. So it would prevent the problem that Commissioner Crispin is bringing up, is like, well, I'm responsible for forwarding every single email. What if I miss an email? What happens then? And is that the one email that causes a problem? And, you know, you don't want it. Do you want to put yourself in that position? Probably not.
Well, and that brings up a question with how this stuff is going into the public input system, in that if you're attaching a PDF or something similar that has information that should be redacted, I have no way to get to that. It's internal to the document. So if we have attached files, that's a complication to that.
You're right. I went through and manually redacted those in the recent requests.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. It would show the person's email address.
So that could be.
We don't need to belabor this happens. I think if you get direction that we need to make it happen and get the docketing, get the public input docketed, I think that's a big step for this piece of this whole puzzle. And but that's just a small fraction of what we've been talking about here. Are you okay with that?
I think it's a pretty big.
It's important. Yeah, it is. It's an important piece.
Well, maybe we do it like we do case management, where we keep one that is a publicly accessible document and one that is an internal one with all the information.
Why don't you two report back? You guys discuss how you might make this happen, and then we can report back. So that the public file will be
truly public now after this, so that's good.
And then, well, I will still be seeking Claire to do everything, no matter what the case is, that we get comments on electronically about a case, we send to Stacy, or are we going to create some new email address where those specifically go so she's not constantly sorting out from her other emails?
We're going to talk about, but okay. I think we'll go to a central. That would be my recommendation.
Okay.
Keep us posted.
Then maybe we can come back, think about, and come back to this issue that Zach raised about our emails being available.
I have a hard time not supporting getting rid of our emails.
Well, I don't like it from many respects, but I think, too, we have to be.
I think we just have to know how to deal with this stuff. We just have to be able to get the information, you forward it along. If you feel we want to open up the hearing, we open it up. But otherwise, it's just, you just have to
be consistent. But now we're, I mean, there's lobbying campaigns going on directly to us, and I think it does suggest that we are, I mean, by being so accessible, I think we're also not really being honest with the public that we are judges. We aren't senators who are here to advocate on behalf of their constituents. We're judges making decisions on cases that parties have an interest in. So I'm just saying it's something I want to think about a little bit, but I think it's a point I hadn't even considered before Zach brought it up.
Well, that's why when we've talked in the past, or I've talked in the past with Stacy's predecessors, the whole Facebook idea for us, I'm not for that kind of stuff, because then you get into these Facebook campaigns and it's just how this information is managed. But we're not staff like the Attorney General, where he's got himself and a deputy. There's three of us that we would need three more people if we didn't have our own emails.
Well, we would have to have emails. I'm just saying emails that are for staff and not for, you know,
they usually figure
public. Ed hasn't.
Somebody wants to send Tony an email. It doesn't go to him.
Right.
I was going to say that's the other thing that I've seen is the agency head actually doesn't answer the emails. My former boss at the health department, his administrative assistant, they sent it to his name, but she got all the emails first and she sorted them and forwarded what needed to go to him and deleted everything else and did whatever she needed to do. But you have to have somebody who knows what to do with all the emails then.
Right.
But that's another way I've seen it done.
I'm not against it, Julie, at all. I just think there's so many different things to consider. And,
right.
You know, the same emails, what do we get emails at home? If the same email that I get at work shows up in my personal email or my Facebook page, what do I do with those? What am I legally bound to do with those? And that's
if you got an ex parte communication on a case, that's the same thing. You print it and you bring it in.
What I'll do is forward it to my own work email, then I'll print it off, because it's happened. I mean, it's just the ways to get at us.
Right,
Because you have to do it if you were stopped on the street. You'd have to report that you had an ex parte communication.
I've always used used your point here of with an interest. If somebody grabs me in the grocery store and says, "Hey, Brian, how's that Dakota Access hearing coming?" They're just being folksy. I just say things.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. They have to have a direct or indirect
right?
interest.
I just say, "Great, we'll have a decision shortly. Good sale today on veggies." I mean, but I don't view that as a Dakota Access. But if somebody grabs me in the grocery store and says, "I live here," so I do use a filter on that.
Yeah, and that's the filter.
Lonnie, you keep saying print it off and.
Well, I don't care if you forward it. But somebody is going to print it sooner or later and PDF it automatically.
I mean, it doesn't make much sense to me when we get a group email for us all to print them off. It seems like we would just forward them to one place.
The reason I asked you to print off those MDU ones, because I don't want to sit there with your computer list and be going like this. It's easier for me to go like this. So that's why I asked for the MDU ones to be printed off. Because I have to take that computer, all those computer, and compare it to the ones that they file. That's all. In this last request of yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we talked about the record of evidence. That we're going to be talking to the ALJ and kind of clarifying how we'd like to proceed moving forward with the in general and all hearings waiving the rules of evidence, but using the standard of relevance for when to sort of close down testimony if people are getting carried away.
Would it be appropriate to have you sit on that, Madam Chair, or one of us? I think it'd be helpful because then it's not just Alana and Zach, and it's one of us who's speaking for the three of us of, hey, this is us.
Right. I'd be happy to do that if you guys want to set something up.
And I'll just throw this out. I think letters that are sent with an individual to a hearing or a meeting somewhere are pretty similar to a letter that's sent via the email. I don't know if they have a lot more standing in the case than something that someone
You're
would email to us.
Probably right.
That's true.
Yeah. So are you
as
suggesting
opposed to someone who comes and just says from the heart and says, my neighbor says, do this, as opposed to I'm saying, do this, and we can ask them a question then.
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting then, Randy, that you'd like to make it policy as part of this discussion with ALJ and let him know that when somebody shows up and wants to read a letter from somebody else, that we say that won't be part of the evidence, that will be part of the public info file?
That's fair. That's what I'm thinking at this point.
But if it goes in the public input file, then it's potentially going to be part of the record, then, I think, is what we're talking about here.
Wait a minute, I don't get that jump you just made.
Well, if it's going in the public record.
Public input. Not official record.
Are we talking before or after the close of the hearing, though?
Doesn't matter.
Well, no, and we're talking about docketing those, but not making them record evidence.
You're talking about what was brought to the hearings that somebody else.
Yeah.
Correct.
So they would end up getting put in there after the hearing.
I'm going to make a suggestion, though. I don't know that it's appropriate to make an across-the-board decision. I think I agree with what Commissioner Christman just said, that it is just about the same as coming in via email or coming into Stacy, you know, and handing her something. But again, somebody should probably make a case-by-case determination on that. If it's at a hearing, I would think that the applicant is going to immediately look at it and the commission attorney, and maybe everybody will say, fine.
All right.
And would you mind then if it's part of the record evidence? I mean, do you want to make beforehand a decision that none of them are? I don't know.
It seems like there should be some consistency to our hearings, though. When in one case, you know, we've had some attorneys presenting to us on behalf of projects who have really had some outrageous things said about the project. And there's some attorneys that just object to nothing. They just let it all go. And so then people hear that, and I was able to read lots of, someone else was able to read lots of things into the record and not put their own name on it, not stand for questions in that case. Now they come to our next case, and they want to do it. And, well, this time we don't allow it. And so it seems like there should be some kind of consistency.
But it's not us allowing it. It's them objecting to it and the judge making a decision.
I don't know. What do you guys who live with it think?
One thing I think when I was talking to Zach about this previously, I think I talked to Julie about this too, the ones that were coming in ahead of time, we had them file an affidavit as well as give an explanation why they weren't able to show up. So they're just not, I mean, I think they had a valid reason, like sickness or something like that, or the hospitalization. And that's why that, in my mind, that wasn't a big concern. A big concern I have is when they're coming to the hearing themselves. And, of course, both counsel can take a look at it, but you come there with a 10-page thing full of facts and stuff like that, and you drop the opposing counsel, they're not going to have an opportunity to really sit there. I mean, we'd have to stop it every time and flesh through the whole thing before we make a decision. And that's a big hassle in my
view. Yeah, it is complicated.
And in that situation, a possible solution, again, I mean, look, we have some lawyers in here that can come up with plenty of solutions, but, I mean, if that attorney for the applicant were to say, well, I need an opportunity to review this and I would like the opportunity to file some type of response after having had a chance to look through it because I haven't had a chance to look at it, you know, I would suspect that the ALJ would consider that, and you know, I'm just speculating here, but probably view that fairly favorably to allow them the opportunity because it was dropped on them at the hearing to give some type of response. But again, I'm thinking out loud a bit and
so
speculating.
So if we were to keep it open, like kind of what Randy's – no, if we were to keep it open kind of what you're suggesting versus what you're suggesting would be to kind of have a clear-cut rule like we aren't going to – the letters that are presented would go into the public input, not the record. If we leave some wiggle room, it does give the discretion, gives the parties both opportunity to look at it and possibly respond, as Zach is just suggesting. But I think it would be important for Stacy to then clarify with folks who say, I can't come to the hearing, I want to send a letter with somebody else, et cetera. The message back to them is, you can, it may or may not be included in the record. That decision will be made at the time based on the parties and their objections or not.
I don't mind some discretion, but I think I've thought through what concerns me with this. Every single one of our hearings that draws significant public response, you get there in the morning and the place has X number of people. By the time we wrap up near the end of the day, I don't know if we ever have half the crowd left. And those people come in, and that's why I was trying to explain why we do the company first, because I know they're anxious and wanting to get going. So what my concern is, I mean, I'm okay with some exceptions, but I'm concerned that the first people to get up and testify and sit down there and then read a 15-page letter from someone who didn't come, and we sit and let them read this whole thing, and in the meantime, others who have spent their morning finally just run out of time. They have to go pick the kids up from school or something like that. So they never get a chance because someone else who didn't come had their essay written.
I wasn't hearing that we would that they would be read. I was hearing that person would say, I have this 15-page letter from John Doe that I want part of the record.
Yeah. Some people do ask to read them into the record.
Yes, and you can say, I think you can just say no because they're not there to be.
Well, and maybe that's the other clarification we can provide to the ALJ.
That's the ALJ that has to say.
Right.
That can't be one.
And I think we should bring all this up with the ALJ because they might think of some things. But at that point, you wouldn't be saying it's definitely public input. I think what I would recommend is that you say you give it to the other parties. They have an opportunity to determine if they object to it being in the record. And you may object, depending on what it is, but you don't say up front how it'll be decided.
Because, you know, the point here to me isn't to cut people off from presenting this. It's to be respectful of everybody else's time. And once they start reading, sometimes there's just no end to this stuff.
Yeah, and I don't know what Randy and Julie think about this, but I've thought about this, that maybe it's time we go back and look at changing our procedures where the company has the technical hearing where they come in and present their case to us in here in Bismarck. And then we go out and have a public input meeting somewhere else, or not in somewhere in the county most affected. It'd be a wholesale change, but some states will do that. They'll have their, you know, they don't do that. You get the first morning to hear what the company is, the offset you might have heard in the bar. We're going to go through the public input, the public and their input to the official record, no matter how it happens. But we break it into two different events. I don't know if that's something that's even legal.
I think you can break it, but I don't think you can have that company hearing here.
But we could do two different events.
You could do two different events. Don't forget, you got those people that might want to hear the public that are out on the farms and ranches.
Sure.
Hear the company, I mean.
But I've often thought that would change the whole format and maybe make it more organized, where we go out and we know that the company is going to have 4 hours to make their hearing, so we'd go to company place X and do it. And then you have the public input, and they just get right to it.
And there are some advantages to that, for sure.
Start
it would take
time
less
for
time for the public, but they also don't benefit from hearing all the facts about the project from the company.
Mm-hmm. That's the part where I don't think the facts ever change them. They come in with what they're going to say, and they're going to say it.
I think there was a fair amount in some of the hearings where I've heard public say, I didn't know X, Y, and Z. And
I just thought, put it out there.
Well, yeah, it's worth thinking about.
Maybe even picking a start time in the future where public input is going to start at this time.
And we've talked about that.
And that's maybe something the company has from 8 o'clock till 11. But at 11:30, we're starting public input, and then we go back to the company.
Yes.
And that's a possibility. The hard part for the company is that they don't necessarily control it. Our questions are what dictates how long.
They still would come back and have to finish it up. Right. Even the companies.
Well, and they could then make sure that, I mean, they could weigh, like, we want to make sure we talk about this, this, and this before the public says their piece, so they could weigh it.
Because Randy's right on, because sometimes I feel the companies know the longer they drag it out, the less of a public input they're going to get because the public gets tired and goes home.
Maybe. I haven't felt that so much as, you know, we ask a lot of questions, especially when it's a first time on a public, on a big project.
It would be an interesting experiment to give them a couple hours and present their evidence, their main case. And, you know, we probably won't get a lot of questions from the public about the lease turns, you know, and so they could put that off until later, you know, but go through where they're going to put valves by rivers and things like that that people, the public would care about. Let the public respond and talk to us and provide information, and then come back and we'll take care of these details that by law we need to and are responsible to take care of.
Bugs and bunnies are Brian's favorite spot.
My favorite, the bugs and bunnies. But, I mean, courts, judges live time limits on much more complex cases than we ever do.
Okay, so I think we're getting through all the issues that I had on my mind and that we talked about from the beginning. We talked about the record of evidence, the ALJ stuff. We're going to clarify some of these things with him. The letters that are read at the hearings, we've got some clarity on that. All the public input will be docketed, but we aren't going to change anything in terms of allowing more public record testimony outside of the hearing itself. We're still pushing people to come to the hearing, be present, be available for cross-examination, et cetera. Ex parte, we need to be diligent about noting those when we get them. I don't think there was anything else on ex parte, were we?
I have one more question that I just thought of on ex parte.
Okay.
So there are some of these, like I think the ones that we mostly have in our mind that are pretty formish and just roll in. We need to keep in mind, we're not just judges, though. We're elected officials, too, and I know a lot of judges are, too, but they don't ever have competition. So there's other emails that we might get in cases that are, you know, more thoughtful and unique. And as an elected official, maybe I want to send a response back to them. Not from Stacy, but from me, that says, you know, this is going into the public input session. I can't really talk about this case. It would be ex parte, but I just want you to know that I did get it, and this is where it's going. So is there anything wrong with doing that and then sending the response as well to the public input file?
I'm going to start that answer with this. The statute is pretty definite. An agency may not have this communication, and a party or person with a direct interest or indirect interest may not have this communication. That's how it starts. It says don't do it. It says if it happens, then you have to disclose it. So at a minimum, if you decide to write back, then you are going to have a cover memo that says, I got this ex parte communication, here's what it said, and here's what I wrote back, and you're going to docket it. I mean, real docket it. Okay. I will point out a couple other provisions of this 28.32.37, which says this. I have never seen this happen, but it is theoretically possible. Subsection 7, if necessary to eliminate the effect of an ex parte communication received in violation of the section, an agency head who receives the communication may be disqualified upon good cause being shown. In theory, someone could ask to disqualify you from deciding that case because of an ex parte communication. So I need to be sure that that's pointed out to you. The other provision that scares me and used to scare Al Wall, the agency shall and any party may report any willful violation to the appropriate authorities for any disciplinary proceedings provided by law That means if I know about it, I may have to report it to the licensing authorities. Now, you're not licensed necessarily to be a commissioner, but another attorney would be licensed. So there's an actual obligation to report a willful violation, which again is a magic word that means more than negligence.
You
so
can certainly have your assistant send a nice note back with your thoughts.
Yes.
Commissioner Chrisman has received this. He appreciates your input, blah, 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 blah. John Hamry.
Yes. Or Stacy can say, Commissioner Chrisman asked me to tell you he appreciates. But what I'm just saying, I'm not saying you can't do it, and I'm saying there is a thing to disclose, but you need to know that there is like a blatant prohibition on these things. It's not just sort of a, it would be nice if you didn't do it. It says don't do it.
Overwhelmed, Stacy. She's going to
I honestly
three different times.
I have pretty standard language that I use, which Alana has helped me with, so it isn't terrible. Like with the MDU ones that I got, I had a standard. All I had to do was change the name I was sending it back to, pretty much. If you wanted personalized a little more, then it would take a little time, but just the standard responses aren't too hard because I have some pretty just standard language that I send back to them.
But for this issue, we haven't, I mean, not a lot. There's been some on Dakota Access. But quite honestly, I do think by having our email addresses out there, we're inviting more of this. And it's, again, I don't have a decision on how I want to handle it from my perspective yet, but I'm going to think about it because I think it also exacerbates the problem from the public. They don't understand why they can't come to us kind of outside of the thing to say, well, that's great, but here's what you really need to know. And mm-hmm. and by being so available, you know, just click on our name on the website and they get an email to us, then they that makes that problem even bigger. I mean, we're inviting it, yeah. Really.
It just occurred to me in this conversation here for the last hour that we could maybe do a little more in the beginning of these cases. You know, when you're first talking about a new rate case and you're going to have public input and stuff, we can explain a little more thoroughly there about please come to this, but don't write to us because, that, you know, if you're a ratepayer, that would be an ex parte communication. Those kinds of things, like we're trying to do with notices and stuff. We could try to educate a little more.
Quite honestly, these are lobbying campaigns, has been pointed out. There's you can disseminate this is truly someone that's interested, and another is just a campaign designed to sway decisions.
Yes, I see.
But it's
that.
Still legal.
I don't know how the Attorney General handles this situation, but if we have a non-publicized email account and somebody files an open records request on it, it's going to be wide open anyways. So I don't know. And sooner or later, people will figure out what that is. You know, maybe Nehru has it and doesn't realize that it's not disclosed, so they put it on their list of commissioners, or who knows how it gets out. But it won't take long, and people will figure that out.
But I think it protects you, Commissioner, perhaps more in that it would take you out of the equations for having to make sure that it's part of the public inquiry file, so to speak. So you wouldn't have to forward that email on. That's at least my thought on it. None of this is designed to attempt to defeat public open records. Everything coming in is going to be an open record, certainly. So even if you have a separate email that someone else is monitoring, everything coming in is still going to be open record.
Should be.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd almost prefer to just keep getting them and forward them on.
Yeah, right.
Clean things off.
Yeah.
We already do have a public email. I mean, we have that separate email already, so it's not a matter of just, I think, a matter of taking our direct emails off the website. I mean, that's the way for the public, the general public, that accesses us directly.
I could change on the website. I could change your guys' email addresses to the general one, so that they're sending to the general one. So if they look you up on our website directory, they'll get the general email, not your one-time name.
Yeah,
I could do it that way too. So names would still be there. It would just be the info at NDPS.
And people will see that, so they know, oh, this is the general one. So if it's something that it's more personal or whatever and they wanted to get a hold of you, then they know they just have to call the office.
Yeah, I could certainly do that.
I mean, I think, personally, I think that would be a good step just to not invite so much of the direct, you know, from constituents who have an issue to our email address. I want to hear from constituents, but there's a proper channel that doesn't invite people on to send ex parte stuff.
I think pulling that off of there, I want to give that a little bit of thought, because I think what it's going to do is cause them to just switch gears and start sending it to our home email addresses. I mean, if
I don't know.
If in the case that's
you think
fresh
we're more popular than
mind,
we are. I don't know how badly people want to get hold of us.
If an organization that everybody's automatically a member of when they're turned 50 decides that they want all their members to barrage us with emails, they're going to give all their members whatever email they can get a hold of. And if it's not this one, it'll be a different one.
Maybe. I do also think that those organizations tend to understand and respect the process, maybe kind of got carried away in this case, but respect the process and respect our need to manage our workload in an honorable way, and that's what we're trying to do. So I don't sense that people want to track me down on my home email, I unless it's a political
not
thing.
Not to
burst
your bubble, but I remember a few years ago when the Senate passed something and a major corporation, I don't know if we passed it or defeated, but it was in the House then, and so it was a House issue, and they figured out almost every House member's cell phone number and bought big ads in the newspapers and listed all the local House members' cell phone numbers.
You burst my bubble. Again, though, it's different. Those people are not judges.
I think it's a personal decision. If you want to do it, just do it. Just like in our press
release. Yeah, we don't have to all do it the same.
Yeah, if you want to do it, do it. Just like our cell numbers. You and I put them on press releases. You put the work
That's
number.
Coming off,
and,
too.
And I'm not sure. I might want to take mine off, too. I'm just saying. Throwing out
your work number, too?
Okay.
I'm just throwing out some
you guys let me know
to think about here.
For each
take important
me
decision.
Me
take me off. Okay. Anything else on this discussion?
I just have one quick clarification about the process after the hearings are concluded.
And I will ask those questions.
Okay. And Alana sent me a great sample letter with language to send back to people explaining that the record is closed, but here are the special proceedings that you can follow if you have. We still log those into the public input file, though? Yes? Is that...
I mean, what's the other option? Saying we can't take it?
Just saying that the record's closed and
I think you
we still want a record of it, right?
You have to take, and that's the basis of the Keystone hearing being reopened.
Okay, because in case you reopen, then or if we, like you said, we start to see a trend, then we would have that. Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. So it would still go in the public input record.
I think so.
In your letter, the language, how does it kind of change a little bit?
It just changes.
You got a copy there.
Okay.
So before the hearing, we talk about how you have to come to the hearing to be on the official record. After the hearing, it says that the record is closed unless, I don't have the language, Lana, unless you follow these special
procedures. Oh, the new evidence, okay.
And then it talks about the procedure that they would need to write in with their information, and then the commission would consider
And I think that's what I was referring to when I confused everyone and made the jump. That's what I was referring to, so I apologize for confusion. There is a set procedure in the statute that would allow for lack of a better word, the reopening of that. But that's what Stacy's talking about in the letter is here's what would need to be done. If they choose to do that, they can try to do that and then see where it goes.
And any commissioner can just open a hearing request if they want.
That's
we
true.
We don't even need a reason. We just
and
need another vote.
And in the meantime, I would just log it in the public input
with
everything else in case.
And it's an important feature. I mean, who'd want to think that we finished a case, then circumstances changed, we all knew it, and we just blindly went by the record and didn't reopen it up to deal with the reality of the day. You know, it's important.
Okay.
But just to be clear too on that, you do agree that we should be informing folks of this because it is in statute, and you don't have to do this in the letter. I mean, it's really up to you whether or not you want staff to inform the public if they've submitted something after the hearing has been completed, whether or not to include a reference to this 2832-25, which sets forth the procedure in which the person would need to follow in order to try to get that document or whatever it may be as part of the formal record at that point.
I think so. Makes sense.
I think it's, yeah. And I haven't read this letter yet. We just got it. But sure. It does say that it's going, if that doesn't happen, that it is part of our public input file, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And just the way that Stacy and all of you keep good track of this information, we just had an inquiry that, I don't remember what it was, somebody asked if we'd seen Amy Dalrymple called her looking for something, and none of us had seen it.
Oh, the letter that none of you got.
Yeah.
gotten that letter yet, even?
But that's an example of by you having a good system, and us having a pretty good system, we're able to look through. We didn't receive it, and if we would have, you'd have had it, we'd have had it, mm-hmm. because these kind of things happen.
Kind of disturbing that the protesters are blowing us off.
I don't know what the deal there was. I don't know where it got sent to, or but it never got here.
Okay. Maybe I got it and it just bounced when I was gone.
Who knows? Maybe they sent it to the Industrial Commission or something like that instead of that.
The NCPSC.
Anything else? Julie? Anything to offer?
Time we're leaving tomorrow.
All right. So thank you all for your patience on that discussion. We did cover a lot of different confusing issues. It's good, though.
We're going to a hearing tomorrow, aren't we, son?
Are we done recording or broadcasting?
I believe we are. Daryl, can you shut